This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stunningly gorgeous Jill Sirkin.
Hello.
Hello. We talked to the lovely Kimora Haynes in the first part of the show, 12-year-old entrepreneur.
Yeah, she's busy crocheting now.
She's clacking away with a crochet hook. Yeah,
I don't think you do clack with a...
Do you not?
No,
because there's only one, isn't there?
She's just looking at you like you've got two heads now.
Oh, yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, she's going, really?
I made that bit up then.
Really,
she isn't clacking. She isn't clacking.
No,
she's hooking. She's hooking.
She's hooking.
Yeah.
But
Hold on. The reason I said that is because I got a tweet here.
Oh, okay.
From Martin Reeves. He said, thank you for my Business Bunker shout out. Kimora is an inspirational entrepreneur and one to definitely watch. When I was 12, I was selling golf balls to my school teachers and football stickers to my mates. If only we'd had the internet back then. Yes, exactly. Sorry, you were going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I can't remember what I was going to say now, but it was something very interesting.
Oh, was it? Very apposite, yeah.
What I was going to say was I'm on GB News tomorrow again with the Mark Stein show.
Lovely.
That'll be my third time. They send a little car for me, a little limousine. So I hope you'll watch 8 p.m. tomorrow live. I've no idea what I'm talking about, which is always the...
Well, there's no change there then, is there?
I know. And also, I've moved to Truth Social. So if anybody listening that follows me on Twitter would like to follow me on
Donald's social media.
I'm on that and Getter because of the awful censorship that's happening about vaccine damage. And as we were saying, there have now been vaccine damage payouts. So the government have had to acknowledge that there are vaccine damages. But Twitter won't let anyone talk about it.
Facebook the same.
They've closed down. So you'll find me on Truth Social talking about with other people about what's happening in the real world.
Okay. Kent County Council, under the Sea Care grant, are offering businesses in Kent up to £1,500 to invest in sustainable travel such as electric bikes. A company electric bike, now there's the thing. UK Electric Bike Centre are running an open event on the 29th to the 31st of July at McNaid in Faversham for individuals who want to look at alternative sustainable transport. If you'd like more information, you need to contact Marcus van der Gag, and you can get hold of him by email at marcus@ukelectricbike.co.uk. So that's marcus@ukelectricbike.co.uk.
Excellent. Yeah, I've got one little electric bike, but they're a bit weird if you haven't been on one, because they really go fast. They sort of rear up if you're not careful.
They rear, do they?
They go whoosh,
like a horse.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Southeast England Virtual Networking, taking place on Tuesday the 2nd of August, 12 till 1. It's a virtual network, and it's in the first week of each month. We bring you a free-to-attend virtual networking for businesses in and around the southeast of England. If you want to find out more about that or book your ticket, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, they'll all be listed there.
And there's a new surf park and spa hotel.
Oh, I heard about that.
Could bring more than 500,000 visitors a year. It's hoped that the 50 million double development could be opened in 18 months once planning permission is given. And it's planned for the Bettshanger County Park near Deal.
Yep.
Do you know it?
Yep.
Stuart O'Leary, head of the popular park, said it's all down to planning, but we hope for this to be open in the next 18 months. As a tourism destination for the area, we think it will be phenomenal. We're already attracting around 170,000 customers a year to the park, and he thinks that they would then escalate that up to more than 500,000 customers
a year.
Blimey,
that's nearly 500,000.
It is. 500,000, you know, I'm not very good at maths.
Yeah,
but even I can work that out. All from as far away as London, they say.
All the way from London.
DFLs.
Mind you, it's in Deal, so they're nearer France, so I can understand their reticence there.
So DFLs will be there. They're all coming down to spend money in the area. I think this will make a fantastic tourism spot, says Stuart O'Leary. The proposal for the surfing experience water park and five-star hotel was first revealed last year for the former colliery. It used to be a colliery.
It certainly did.
So was that mining?
It was a coal mine. Yeah, Bettshanger and Snowdon were the two big collieries in Kent.
I think we need to open them up again, frankly, with a war that's going on in Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, they shut a long time ago.
I know, but I could do with a fire this winter.
If you wander around there, there's still lumps of coal hanging around.
Oh, that's what I need.
Yeah, you need to take a bucket down there.
Yeah, I've got a wood burner, but I've actually turned off my swimming pool boiler at the moment to save money, because our bills went up to like...
You should worry, I've got a heat pump.
Well, is that? I thought that was better than a boiler.
No,
I thought you told me it was more economical.
No, it's cheap. I used to have a
you bragged about it.
No, I used to have Caligas, but I had a Caligas boiler.
Yeah,
and that's like just burning gold bricks.
Yeah, well, I've turned mine off, Paul Andrews, and my husband thinks I'm very admirable. So now our swimming pool is freezing, but I've been going in the sea, which is actually warmer than the swimming pool, because our bill went up to about 440 or something a month.
I'm smiling because I
so if you can pass me
some idiot on LinkedIn started trolling me when I posted this, and then reported me as having a fake account, and they took my photograph off on the grounds it wasn't me, and it was me.
Who took your photograph off?
LinkedIn. Yeah, because a guy reported me.
I could vouch for you. You're definitely you.
Anyway, somebody posted this often cited thing that people estimate that the average energy bill is going to rise to £3,350 a year. And they posted that just after I got my last quarterly bill.
Yeah.
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 And I went, well, I wish mine was only that.
Yeah.
Because my quarterly bill for April, May and June was £1,100.
That's crazy. And there's only two of you and a nipper in the house.
And what are they called? Octopus energy?
With
their green, alleged green energy.
Yeah.
They kindly wrote to me and they said, if you're worried about this, you can fix the price for a year.
Mm.
Okay. And they said, it's an annual fee and you fix it, and no matter what happens, you never pay a penny more.
Mm.
Okay. How much? Go on. How much do you think they wanted to charge me for a year's gas and electricity?
Well, so
on a fixed contract.
So you're a grand a month you were looking at? So I don't know. Well, it's supposed to be a discount.
A grand a quarter.
So it's supposed to be a discount.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, just tell us. I can't bother to ask.
It was £12,000 they wanted.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Why don't you... I'm with Utility Warehouse and have been for years, and they are pretty good. And they've just reduced ours down to three something.
Yeah.
But I turn off now our hot water at night because we have a shower in the morning. Gav's got an electric shower. So I turn it off at night now because I've got no kids at home.
Amanda was punching me like anything last week.
Punching you?
Yeah, in our bathroom.
Is that abuse?
In our bathroom, we've got two towel rails.
Yeah.
And they're fed by the hot water.
Mm.
Yeah. And you remember the world's hottest day
that we were
all going to die? Like, both of those come on in the middle of the night, full blast.
Oh.
Yeah. And Amanda's going, turn them off. I can't. There's no way I could turn it off.
Can't you? Don't you have a little thing?
No. For some reason, the two things don't have an on-off thing on it.
You want to get a plumber around. You can put a little tap on.
Yeah. Exactly. And she's going, you need to get a plumber around. I go, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, Amanda. There's not one available right at the moment. And by tomorrow, it'll be raining.
I think it was on maybe Saturday night. It was very hot at our house for some reason. And we can't open the windows wide in the bedroom because we're on the ground floor on the seafront.
Mm.
So I got up at 4 o'clock with, just had a sheet on. I was boiling.
You had a what?
And a little sheet. You can't have the duvet. And I opened up the whole of the back of the house thinking we're going to get burgled now. It was like 4 in the morning.
Mm.
Opened up the whole lot, opened up all the windows and everything, and there was a little breeze coming through, and it was such a relief.
It wafted, did it?
A little waft, yeah. Anyway, well, I was saying that this Stuart O'Leary, I think he's got some Irish in him.
Yeah.
Just a drop of it.
Yeah.
The proposal for the Surfing Experience water park and 5-star hotel was first revealed last year for the former colliery. That's where we went on to the whole thing. So the planned surf park was also described as a wave garden.
It is a wave garden.
Do you know what a wave garden is?
It is. It's a surf park.
It would be very similar to an existing site in Bristol called The Wave.
Right, that's like a surf park.
I still don't really know what a wave garden is. Is it where plants wave?
Have you never been to Disney?
No, I can't afford it.
Oh, right. Okay. It's basically an artificial lagoon with a wave machine.
Okay.
And it creates waves that are big enough to surf on, but right. in an artificial lagoon.
Why are they calling it a garden? Why don't they just call it a wave pool?
Because they put plants around the outside.
Okay. Well, water lilies and things.
You've clearly never been to Typhoon Lagoon.
No.
Okay.
But I did used to go in London. There was a, when I lived in Clapham, there was a wave machine in the local baths.
Yeah, but you've got to go to Typhoon Lagoon.
Where is that then?
Disney.
That's a long way to go just for a wave.
It's worth looking at.
I can't surf anyway.
Yeah.
I fall off.
Yeah.
New husband paddle boards, winds. He's like, it's like living with God knows for who. But he's always out there. He was out there for hours the other day windsurfing. And I, because I've got a metal knee, it's quite hard to actually stand up on.
Well, you
can't,
sink, don't you?
I can't kneel.
You've got a lump of metal in there.
Yeah.
You sink, one of your legs sinks.
And when I travel, I set off the whole thing.
Mm. Do you?
With the titanium. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's stupid. They make me say, take your earrings off and your bracelets. I go, there's no point. Just put me through the thing.
Yeah.
I'm not taking off all my jewellery.
Just when you go and put your goods on, just sit on the conveyor belt.
Just lay on it. Yeah.
In a little tray. I get frisked every time.
I've got a couple of events I want to tell you about, and then we're going to talk to Gemma.
Yeah.
Okay. There's Kent Virtual Networking taking place on Wednesday, the 27th of July. That's manana, isn't it? That's tomorrow.
Yeah,
4 till 5 p.m. I'm going to give you the booking for both of these in a minute. And then there's Ethnic Minority Led Virtual Business Networking the day after. That's Thursday, the 28th of July, 11 a.m. to 12. That's led by this time, I think, Jason Roberts. And both of those, you can find all the details and book by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. Right. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the show. It's been a long time since
been
you were last
while,
on.
Hasn't it?
Yeah. the adorable, lovely, the fantastic, the talented, the highly intelligent and brilliant Gemma Faircloth-Haynes.
Yeah.
I'm doing a big sale for you there. Gemma's my HR law consultant, and I have to keep her sweet, otherwise she won't look after me. Yeah,
I'll always look after you.
Gemma is the Chief Executive of Orchard Employment Law. She's an employment law specialist, and you've had a busy time, haven't you? We've had a lot of stuff going on over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So from your point of view, Gemma, just tell us a little bit about Orchard Employment Law first and a bit about your background for those that don't know you.
Okay, so it doesn't quite compare to Kimmy Crochet, so I'll sort of start there. But I started Orchard Employment Law in 2015, 7 years ago.
Right.
Do you remember how shy I'm retiring I was, George?
Oh, I do, yeah, yeah.
So shy I'm retiring. So I started 7 years ago. I'm at my home, like most people do, and it grew. So what we do is we support businesses with employment law and HR, and we've been very busy because it's one of the fastest changing laws in the UK.
It must be hard to keep up with everything that's happening.
And of course, a lot of things that have happened over the last couple of years are just so unique, you know, like furlough and all the rest of it.
Right.
There is no case law for it. It's all, you know, well, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, so we're only just now starting to see, because the tribunal system, it had a backlog before we started, to be honest, like most things.
Yeah.
And now the backlog's even longer. So we're now just starting to see those pandemic cases coming through and being heard. So, you know, was it right to fire me when I wouldn't come back into the office? Or should they have put me on furlough if they didn't want to offer it? All of those things are now starting to trickle through, and that's making new case law. But it was an incredibly busy time. I know we've spoken to Kimora and she says she was bored. She underplayed it. As an only child, I was tearing my hair out, you know, trying to keep up with Rishi Sunak's Friday night. Always like 10 to 5 on a Friday.
Fridays used to be fun, remember?
And then you'd have your clients be like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't know. It just kind of just found out the same time as you. So I'd be scouring scouring the .gov site, scouring the law to see how that would impact our clients, and really just trying to get there first to help them help them through it. It was a difficult time. Like, looking back, it was a difficult time.
Do you have like a mentor that you can go to, or someone that will actually break it down for you?
I'm that person.
You have to do the whole thing.
But with something like the last couple of years, even if you had your own tame professor of Harvard Law, it was of no use, because this kind of stuff was just being invented by the government as they went along.
Yeah.
And when you, like you say, if you read the government websites, there was dozens of caveats on there that said, you know, well, we're not really sure, yeah, but you know, you can do this, but it might not work.
Yeah. And then what you'd have to do is you'd have to then compare what is on the government website along with known statutes, and then look at your client's documents. So, you know, with furlough, one of the big things was everyone just said, well, the government says we can furlough people. And I was like, hold on, you actually have to have the right to do that, either in your contract, or we then have to put something, get an agreement in writing. You can't just deduct people's pay even though they're doing nothing.
Yeah.
You can't just decide to pay them 80%.
Yeah.
And of course, nobody disagreed with going on 80% for not doing very much. But it was getting people to understand that just because you've seen this on the news doesn't mean that there isn't a process to follow.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the big big points about politicians announcing stuff on the fly. I mean, because none of this went through Parliament. It was all just announced, and people go, yeah, you know, a classic one, not within employment law, but one of the big classic ones was bounce back loans, yeah, from the banks. The government breezed along and said, right, you can have one for 5 years. And then when people started going, but I'm not going to pay it back in 5 years, they went, you can have 10 years. But the banks went, no, you can't.
No, you can't, yeah. Yeah.
No, you absolutely can't. You're paying it back in 5 years, and I don't care what the Prime Minister said. Mm. And, you know, and then people were going to, you know, politicians, and they go, no, 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 it's 10 years. And the banks just went, we have a contract. That's the contract.
Exactly.
It's 5 years.
Yeah.
And so that was just stuff I knew. So it must have been even worse with employment law.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty horrific. And then, you know, there were some things that changed during the pandemic time, which were going to change anyway, but nobody paid a blind bit of notice because they were too busy finding too much else going on.
Yeah,
dealing with that. So things like now in 2020, employment contracts, you had to give them by day one from 2020. Prior to that, forever, we had up until 8 weeks. But nobody had noticed that had happened because we were too busy firefighting.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's been really interesting. And
so your Friday nights were not as much fun as they should have been.
No, but looking back at it, you know, it was a learning curve, I think. Business-wise, even though my business was in demand because of what we do, it really made me realise how all of that background work, you know, for a lot of people, we were that first port of call, and it's all of that background work that I'd been doing for years and years with building, establishing the brand.
Yeah, I think for a lot of small and medium-sized businesses, it's the first time they actually took it seriously.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. A lot of businesses, even on jobs in Kent, we still get people that put the most ridiculous adverts going, you know, no women. What? Yeah. I'm not posting that, you idiot. Yeah, well, I go, yeah, but they get pregnant and I don't want that because I'm not paying maternity leave. Yes, you are. You know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're gross examples, but I think a lot of small businesses kind of went, oh, we're only small, it doesn't really count for us,
Exactly. They said it doesn't really count for us, you know, that I've asked I've asked my accountant.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, accountants are fantastic at accounting, but I can't do accounting and they can't do
employment law, exactly, HR. Yeah.
So, don't get me wrong, most accountants are good and they'll go and speak to Gemma, but...
This was a long time ago, but can I tell you something? Some lawyers don't do employment law either. Many, many, many years ago, like 30 years ago, in one of the first businesses I had, we wanted to dismiss an employee. And my business partner at the time went, well, let's just sack him. I went, no, you can't do that. You know, there's rules. Well, what are the rules? I don't know. So I said, we had a very prestigious local law firm, the general commercial law firm. I said, why don't we go and ask them? And she went, oh, it's going to cost money. I went, yeah, but better safe than sorry.
Cheaper than getting it wrong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I went and I saw one of the partners of the law firm, and he went, oh, just sack her. Now, I don't know what possessed me, but I just said, could you put that in writing, please? And he went, yeah. And he wrote me a letter saying, no, there's nothing stopping you sacking this person, just sack them. She took us to a tribunal. We'd lost the tribunal for not following the process. But luckily, the lawyers, I then went, and they paid all the damages. Well, they paid all the fine. There wasn't a big fine anyway, because the woman that was dismissed didn't help herself try and find a job anyway. But they had to pay all my costs and everything as well.
And, you know, that's actually a mild example. So, you know, a little while ago, I was getting media requests left, right and centre about the P&O Ferries thing. And they would have taken advice. And I don't for a second think that P&O Ferries didn't take advice about that. But, you know, it's bigger than money, isn't it? They've paid whatever. But the damage, the reputational damage for... P&O Ferries is
huge. Well, and sadly, it wasn't just P&O Ferries, was it? P&O Cruises that had nothing to do with them whatsoever also got hit by it. And that was interesting, though. It was interesting because of what I do with Jobs in Kent, I have a very fringe ideas about different ways of employing people. Yeah, and when that story broke, I started looking at it and I thought, well, you know, they're a maritime company. They must have employed them on maritime contracts. They must. Yeah, it's the same with airlines. Because the workers aren't based in one country. So I thought, you know, all these people piling in going, Nate, you can't do that. Actually, you can. It's just one of those anomalies that, you know, and one of the reasons they do it, of course, is there's no minimum wage and all the rest of it, which is what P&O ended up doing, was sacking everybody and employing loads of people from Southeast Asia on £1 an hour contracts, which is dreadful. But you're right, you know, it is an area that there's been so much legislation. But not only has there been so much legislation, there's been so many kind of weird things that have happened because of the pandemic and all you know, and all the other stuff. And then of course we've ended up in this position where a lot of people were sent to work at home because the government ordered it and now won't go back.
So I mean, that's quite interesting. We've had they call it the Great Resignation. I love how they have names for these things. Kind of a mass exodus of people going, oh, if I've got to work in your office, I'm not coming in, I'll go and work for someone who'll let me work from home. But interestingly, and you don't really hear about this in the media, but I guess because we're supporting employers, we're seeing more employees wanting to come to work now. We're seeing a check. They don't want to come to work 5 days a week, but they're like, can I come in 2 days?
There's been a shift.
There's been a shift because we're social beings. We're not supposed to be
on our own.
On our own.
Sitting at the kitchen table.
Without naming names, you can tell me later. without naming names, are there any businesses that are going, no, you can't come back in because we've sold the office?
Yeah, there's quite a few.
Is there?
There's quite a few. And you know, because I'm based down at Dragon Co-working, so we've seen a lot more. And then people going, well, my mental health, I need an office space. Yeah. And they go, oh, fine, we'll pay for you to go in a co-working space, but don't tell the others. Or some of them say, oh, yeah, actually, this co-working space is there if and when you need it. So I think we're going to see more hybrid in the future.
I agree to
hedge my bets.
In fact, where I live in Whitstable, as you know, as you drive towards Faversham, they're putting on the left of the Thanet Way loads and loads of these small light offices. So they're obviously seeing that trend, as you say. My son Shay, that we mentioned earlier, he works for Stripe, and he's in Greenwich paying a fortune for rent, but they have allowed him to go in the office if he wants, work from home if he wants, totally flexible, but also hot desking. They've paid for him to go into various hot desking places in London, which is really flexible.
And that's great. Again, it depends on what your staff are doing. You know, my thing about working from home is people need to remember you're still responsible as an employer for health and safety and data protection, and people don't always live on their own. So just, that's not to say they can't do it, but just provide them with, you know, headphones, the tools, and, you know,
it is difficult, isn't it? Because I suspect, I'm not asking you to comment on this, but I suspect a number of smaller businesses really didn't pay a lot of attention when you were in the office, and probably pay even less attention when you're at home. In terms of, you know, all of those kind of things. I mean, I've told the story many, many times about my ridiculous non-existent internet policy that I thought I had but didn't. And that's just so typical, isn't it? And that is another element that's been added to all of this. You know, now we have this cancel culture thing where if you post something on social media and somebody takes umbrage at it, they immediately go after your employer and try to get you into trouble.
Yeah.
But you've got the other side of that, that your employers are kind of stuck, aren't they? Because they don't want bad publicity. Mm. But and how do you handle it? You know, and there are too many timid people out there as well, you know, timid companies that don't just go, you know, shut up and mind your own business. We'll manage our own company.
You know,
thank
it's quite interesting, isn't it, how you handle. So there's two things to think about there. One is you should have a social media policy in place.
Yep.
And you should say you don't represent the company and say stuff that's going to get us in trouble, you know, or lose us favour with our clients or would-be clients.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I think people have a right to an opinion.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to be careful, haven't we, that we're not being too virtue signalling and saying, well, you can't have an opinion at all.
Yep.
But you can make sure those opinions are your opinions and people know they're your opinions and they're not.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it becomes difficult, isn't it, with things like that? I've always said that you should never mix personal stuff with business stuff. I've caught myself a couple of times doing the wrong thing on social media where somebody says something, you just go, no. And all of a sudden I go, hold on, why am I arguing with this person about the wrong thing? You know, it's just... one of the problems, and I mentioned earlier about this troll I had on LinkedIn. I mean, he posted photographs of my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's really dangerous. That's your data.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I've no idea why. He just went tonto, and he found out everything about me. Because one of the problems with being a company director is your address and everything is freely available on company's house. Mm. It doesn't, you know, once you've got someone's address, you go Google Earth, there you go, bang, photograph, here we go. So there is a problem that even if you don't tell people who you work for, it's fairly easy to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, you pursue people. So it's a really difficult area, isn't it? I don't know how you police it. I really don't.
I think the thing is you deal with things as and when they happen. It's not. I'm not encouraging employers to go stalking their employees' Facebooks and Twitter handles. But at the same time, if something does come to your attention, then you've got to deal with it. And sometimes it will be a disciplinary issue. So, you know, that's just a fact, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And like everything, those disciplinary issues are about following a procedure.
And there's a process. Yeah, I had one today. A client was like, oh, can we just dismiss? And I was like, no. we've got to do this, and then we've got to do an investigation, and then we've got to do a disciplinary. Oh, that's going to be done by two separate people. Make sure you tell them they can bring a union rep or a companion. So, there is a process to follow.
And it's, you know, it can be annoying when you think you have a clear-cut case. But the point is, it's about being fair, isn't it? And the whole point about law, you know, you see this quite often, especially with politicians, where the press break a story and then everybody assumes that they're guilty because the press said so. Yeah. But we seem to have lost every concept of a fair trial first. And it's the same on a much more, down-to-earth basis. If you've got an employer, an employee that you think, right, you know, you've been naughty or I don't want you anymore or whatever, it's a two-way process. You've got to go, you've got to be fair and give them a chance to, you know, defend themselves or, you know, give their side of the argument.
Well, I had that conversation, again, the same client, so they're quite a small business, so there were only two managers or two manager owners in the business, and they said, well, so you've got to have an investigation meeting, and then after that you might decide to have a disciplinary meeting. And he said, well, what's the point? Isn't it the same thing? Did you do this? And I got to ask them again, did you do this? I said, it is, but you know what it is the investigation you don't have to give any notice of. You can literally pull somebody aside and say, look, I've got this concern. And then at the disciplinary, you've got to give notice. So you have to give 2 working days notice. You have to tell them the worst possible outcome. And people's answers change when you tell them they might lose their job or when you go, you might get a slap on the wrist. If they think they'll get a slap on the wrist, whatever, But if you're telling someone actually your livelihood's in jeopardy, they fight tooth and nail. And that's why that process is in place, even though it might look repetitive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Did we talk about vaccine mandates of going into the office? Because I know lots of people that had to have vaccines to get into the office, young people in London especially.
So, I mean,
Did you cover that?
You know, I never really subscribed to the having to have vaccines to get into the office. Now, if you were working with vulnerable, you're in an, you know, working with vulnerable people, maybe so. But even the government, you turned on that, didn't they? When the doctors and nurses refused to sign.
Well, because it doesn't stop the spread.
Just as an aside, because it makes me laugh, and it makes me laugh how many people obviously don't know the first thing about what they're talking about on social media. We had this problem with French border control at Dover last week. Yeah. And, of course, there's a whole heap of people that go, it's Brexit, do you realise you have to have your passport stamped and that takes forever, yada, yada, yada. And everybody was going on about that. Everybody missed the most obvious thing about going to France.
Everybody broke up at the same time.
No. You still, to go to France, you still have to produce a vax.
Oh, a certificate.
I thought they'd stop that now.
No. You have to have a vax certificate or a lateral flow test. Yeah. And that's still in place until July the 31st.
Really?
When the law in France expires. But knowing Macron, he'll probably reinstitute it. But right at the moment, you have to have either your QR code or your NHS
app.
Do
they allow a recovery of certificate of recovery Spain?
You can have a recovery certificate or an exempt certificate.
That's how I got to Spain. Oh, they allow an exemption?
Yeah, but my point
is... It still
is,
takes time, isn't it?
My point is you've got to get there and speak to a French official and go, I've got one of these, two of these, one of these, and her over there is only 10, so she doesn't have to have one.
Plus the fact that everybody breaks up and goes away on the same... They always rush off, don't they, on that first thing.
And I'm going to show you something later.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At the end of this, there's also the fact that you have to have your passport stamped. And because when you enter the Schengen area, you're only allowed to stay 90 days out of 180.
Yeah.
And the passport stamp is there because they haven't worked out how to use the biometrics that are already embedded in your thing. And the fact that when you turn up at the Channel Tunnel, there's an API and an AMPR camera that links, when you book the tickets, your number plate's linked to your passport and you just sail through. And then you get to a booth where a bloke with a rubber stamp has to put a rubber stamp on your passport. I've got a picture of the last one that I had done.
Mm.
It's just a red outline. There's nothing in the middle.
Oh.
They didn't put enough ink on the stamp, so there's no nothing date, there's no time, there's nothing. It's just a red blob.
You'll have to get a graphic designer to sort that out.
But that's the same with everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're seeing, like, you know, even coming back to the HR stuff, is they brought in this biometrics for right to work and then didn't tell anybody how to use them. And so everyone's like, well, you know what, I'll just give me a passport. It's so much easier just to look at a passport and a document rather than saying, we've got to go and see... You know, this biometrics. So
Did get some daffies. Stuart, my youngest, who's 27, he would have been 17, 18 when his passport expired. And I went to renew his passport, and they said, if you've already got a biometric passport, you don't need to submit a new photograph.
Yeah.
Okay. So I went one. He's got a passport now with a picture of him as a 10-year-old in it still, because they didn't require a new passport photo. It's just bonkers.
It's catfishing to a whole other level.
It's bonkers. So Gemma, just to kind of round off on where we are in the whole world of employment law, what's hot at the moment? What are we looking out for now?
Do you know what? It's been a really busy month, actually. I'll tell you a few things.
Yeah.
So we had this case called Harper, for you people that like to look things up, Paul. And Harper was about how you calculate holiday for part-year workers and people on zero-hour contracts.
Right.
So a part-year worker, someone who doesn't work the full 52-hour weeks, often seen in nurseries, nannies, education, said... We used to calculate holiday based on 12.07%, which was representative of 28 days a year.
Right.
That's how I simplify it.
Yeah.
And they said, well, I don't want 12.07% because I'm not working the full year. I actually feel like I should get higher. Court agreed. Hers was about 17%. And so now, doesn't make any sense, this. All employees, part-year and workers, zero-hour workers, are entitled to the full 28 days or 5.6 weeks from... day one. So there's no accrual now of holiday pay. So technically, a casual worker, a part-year worker, could work for you for 2 weeks and go, I want 4 weeks holiday, and you've got to base it off my last 2 weeks because I worked 5 days a week or 6 days a week those last 2 weeks, and you'd have to give it to them.
Right, and then they leave.
And then they leave.
And go somewhere else and do the same again.
Yeah, the same again. And of course, you could try and recoup it, but I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
So that one's quite hot as well.
It's again, it's one of those things where you want to protect workers. And, you know, I have no problem with protecting workers, but there's some legislation out there that's just bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you just think, well, hold on, that's just a license to take the mickey. Yeah.
And sometimes it creates more unfairness. So this instance, part-year workers get more holiday entitlement than someone who's full-time.
Yeah.
So, a full-year worker.
Yeah.
So that's one. That's other strange. Things are, we've got this battle of, you know, what's right and wrong in terms of, you know, politically correctness.
Yeah.
So
that's a whole chapter and another show, isn't it?
So battle of the who's
pronouns.
Freedom of speech versus pronouns. So there was a case recently where a guy refused to call somebody by their pronoun because he was like, it's my belief that that's the biological thing.
Yeah.
He got dismissed, and they said, well, we had to dismiss him because it was offending the patients. And the tribunal says, well, just because it's unpleasant, he's entitled to his view. His view isn't greater than the person who wants to be called by their pronouns view. So that's a little bit up and down, that seesaw. We're just kind of watching to see what happens with the outcome of that.
I suppose if you're reliant on a judge or a magistrate making that call, it depends on the political view of the person making the call, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that's why I said that's seesawing. So we're just waiting to see what happens when that finally gets seen.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you probably saw the whole furore over, was it Halifax Bank when they
when they made them wear a badge. They
posted the lovely Gemma with her pronouns on it and everybody. You know, I mean, there was some really fatuous, stupid stuff. I got very briefly involved in it, just from the point of view, is somebody from Halifax said, it's really, really horrible for someone who wants their pronouns, for you to use the wrong pronoun when you talk to them.
Fair enough.
And I went, if I'm talking to you, under what circumstances would I use a pronoun of any kind?
Yeah.
I don't go,
hello
her,
he,
or
no.
Hello them,
you say
or hello
Peter,
but
Jane.
They might hear you in earshot if you were then.
If it was a third party, exactly.
If you went to another staff member and said she wants to open a bank account, that could happen.
And I conceded that point that it's only a third party discussion. It can only ever happen as a third party discussion.
And then they shouldn't be eavesdropping, maybe.
Well, no, but I mean,
you have to do it in private, maybe. I suppose if they were actually involved in the conversation, so there were three of you talking.
And you went, she said,
Paul, you'd say he said.
Anyway,
difficult.
I've written to the BBC about my television licence and told them my TV now identifies as a microwave, so I haven't got to pay it.
I've got to watch Unvaccinated tonight, which was absolutely slated. You know, it was like a reality TV show where they were trying to persuade unvaccinated people to be vaccinated. And they called the unvaccinated or the vaccinated reticent jelly beans. I'll probably be talking about that tomorrow, Manjana. But the lady that was on it, Vicky, I've forgotten her surname, sorry. But she said that everything that she said was edited out.
Yeah.
And it is really, really bad. And I kind of wonder where the BBC is going on all this.
Well, it's, the press, no matter what part of the media, they always edit it to have the most controversial stories, don't they, to generate clickbait.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's some interesting stuff happening in the world of employment still, and some fights for employers to still go through with employing zero-hour contract staff. I've always had an issue with people that wanted to scrap zero-hour contracts, because it's another one of those things that people don't always take into account, those people that want something like that. And just one of the statistics that I always quote, because I found it in a report a year or so ago, is that 32% of people on zero-hour contracts are actually students. They couldn't possibly do a full-time job even if they wanted to, because they're students and they're supposed to be in class. You know, so if you ban zero-hour contracts, those students can't do part-time work.
Well,
or
yes.
Very hard part-time
and
work.
And also, Paul, then what do? You have a one-hour contract.
Yeah, exactly.
You,
yeah, yeah.
You then go, well, it's not 0 hour, it's 30 minutes.
It's an hour. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the rest is overtime.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We will always find a way around it. And I totally agree. I think 0 hour contracts, when used properly, are incredibly powerful.
Yeah,
there are people who don't want to, they're gigging. They don't want to be held down.
Yeah.
To be working time, they don't want to work.
Yeah,
and there
absolutely.
Are businesses, like if you're a seasonal business, it makes sense for you to call people in as and when you need
yeah.
them.
If you look at the bulk of businesses that use them, they're things like event companies. Yeah, so you staff the hospitality staff at a wedding.
Mm.
Yeah, we don't do a wedding every day of the week. You do them on a Saturday.
Mm.
Yeah, so the staff come and work on Saturday. Yeah, interesting days and just so much legislation.
What about breaks? Because you're talking about hospitality. Yeah, and have a break.
Yeah.
But, you know, hospitality, I look at the hours that they work, some of them, and it has got a little bit better, but some of them are just all day and all night. And, you know, what are the rules?
So to be honest with you, the rules are fairly shocking from an employee standpoint.
I can imagine. Maybe
that will be reviewed at some point in time.
Mm.
But we've got, if you work more than 6 hours, you're entitled to 20 minutes.
Wow.
And that's it, you know, if whether it's 12 hours or
yeah.
6 hours, it's still a 20-minute break.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's other things that we're watching across the pond, sort of in Europe and in Ireland, where they've got this right to switch off as well.
Mm.
So you can't contact your staff outside of work time at all.
Mm.
It's illegal now
right.
in Europe. And I wonder whether at some point in time...
When you say Europe, though, we've left the EU. Has that changed?
So that hasn't changed. That's the point. That hasn't changed for
us. Interesting.
It has changed for Ireland because they're still Europe. So it hasn't changed for Northern Ireland. But I wonder whether... Because sometimes you see things happen somewhere else and then that then creates...
People start a demand for it here.
They, you know, my friend in Spain says you can't email me outside of work time.
Yeah,
and I think again, there's good. It's done with good intention, but actually, sometimes you need to say, by the way, tomorrow morning or Thursday, whatever.
It's like WhatsApp, isn't it? I mean, I get WhatsApp. We get WhatsApp sometimes on Christmas Eve, and you know, other nationalities don't have Christmas, and you know, we've got a lot of international clients. So, WhatsApp is a big thing. Ours is always pinging.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, these kind of things always throw up massive anomalies.
Mm.
You know, like if you work across time zones, how on earth do you manage that? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Are you telling me you're not allowed? You know, I used to work for an investment bank. And the traders would be at work at midnight because Tokyo opened.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so there's got to be some degree of flexibility in some of these things. And you're absolutely right, Gemma. A lot of people don't deserve to be disturbed. Mm. And, you know, it's the difference between abuse and necessity, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think the way out of that, I don't know what you feel about this, is what you put in your contract of employment as much as anything else.
Yeah, so one of the things you now have to include as of 2020 is what people's working hours are. So what people's working hours are, but also what the business opening hours are. So that's a new one.
Yeah.
So that would help you. Well, if the business is open 24/7, you know.
Yeah, I mean, can you have in a contract I'm employing you and I'm employing you for 35 hours a week, but you have to do a certain amount of on-call hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can do that. And you can say there may be occasions when you're expected to work an evening or weekend. And I just don't take the mickey, you know.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. It's about being a good employer, isn't it?
The same thing, as an employer, sometimes my staff will message me and say, you know, in the evening, not well, won't be able to come in tomorrow.
Mm.
That's my working time as well, so you know,
yeah.
It works both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's difficult, isn't it? I've just read This Is Gonna Hurt. I don't know if you've seen that. It's a BBC a true story about a doctor, Adam Kay. He's written a book, and it was a drama, and his working hours as an on-call doctor, you know, in actually the pregnancy, you know, having babies bit, was unbelievable. He literally missed every evening meal with his partner, and you know, very, very difficult. He's now a script writer.
I mean, there are other rules around when, you know, carers and hospital workers.
And lifting, that's the other thing with carers, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things also are incredibly worrying from a poor employer point of view. Yeah. you know, I would be really angry if I was being looked after by someone that had just worked 80 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to be looked after by you. I want you to go home and go to sleep.
Yeah.
And I want a doctor or a nurse or something that's only just arrived on shift and is still compos mentis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is why mistakes get made with doses and things.
Exactly. Yeah. Fascinating subject, and always brilliant to talk to you, Gemma, as always, and the insights you have into the world of employment law, and it's just, we've got so many things that are coming along that we need to keep on top of it. So what I recommend to all you businesses out there is get Gemma on your side. You know, Orchard Employment Law, they're the people for you to help you out with everything. Gemma, thank you so much for that. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Just give us a shout out for your website so that people can come and look you up.
So the website is www.orchardemploymentlaw.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. We've only got 6 minutes left of the show. So have you got anything you need to read, Jules?
The company which operates the Eurotunnel, as we were discussing just now, the cross-channel service, says it has recorded very encouraging financial results for the first half of the year. Getlink says the lifting of travel restrictions and demand for its services have seen its revenues on its core business increase 81% year on year, and earnings before tax shoot up to 213% to 260 million. Do they mean up from? I don't know. Shoot up 213%, sorry, to 260 million. Overall, the company reported earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortisation. What does that mean?
Amortisation. We've got 2 minutes, so I can't explain amortisation. Indeed,
otherwise known as EBITDA.
EBITDA.
I've heard of EBITDA.
Yeah.
Of 309 million. Never heard the proper word. To 264 million, so that's good. That a little cross-channel ferry there thriving.
1.4 million traffic movements through the tunnel last year.
Yeah,
1.4 million.
Yeah,
and they wonder why the A20 is busy because there's 900,000 on the ferry, so there's over 2 million traffic movements on that silly little bit of A20
M20. In the wrong business.
I just think that if we have to show COVID recovery certificates or whatever, and other things, why can't we do it electronically before we leave? Like when I went with British Airways, I had to do it as part of my boarding pass.
In September.
That'd be sensible, wouldn't
it? September. They implement in the European Union a thing called ESS, which is which is a new entry system, electronic entry system, which requires facial recognition.
Okay.
And they wrote this system years ago and have been trialling it and all the rest of it, and they go, yeah, it's brilliant, except they forgot to trial it at the tunnel and at the ferry ports, because it works beautifully in an airport, because each of you come along separately and go, it's me, and smile in the camera. Four of you arriving in the car have all got to get out of the car and all got to look in a camera to see who you are. And the Port of Dover are going bonkers, going, that is never going to work at any ferry terminal or any train station, because that's not how people board. And that's coming in September. So
it's probably much easier just come over in a rubber dinghy to Dungeness.
You don't need anything. Then
they
just
pop
turn
it
up.
And you get a free hotel as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, what's
right.
Not to like.
Business Recovery Loan Scheme has been extended. You may have seen that the loan scheme, which was due to end on the 30th of June, has been extended for a further 2 years. This is for business loans up to £2 million, and if you need to borrow less than £250,000, you don't even need a personal guarantee. This is a new announcement, and most lenders haven't yet updated their websites, but when they do, you can apply through the British Business Bank website, but it's not been updated yet.
The trend going on here, isn't
there? Wait, have you got anything else, Jules?
Yes. Well, this is a bit long. How long have we got?
That's a minute.
Too long. So food critic Jay Rayner has named a restaurant in Whitstable as the top 10. I bet I can guess which one. Mm-hmm. Oh, top 10 list of recommendations of coastal eateries. Writing in this week's Observer, he details the top places to dine as we flock to the coast this summer. Jojo's Meze.
Yeah.
Please don't park in my road. It's already full. It's a restaurant close to his heart. Last summer, it is famous faced an uncertain future after its landlord looked to sell the building. Rayner joined the likes of fellow fans Tom Kerridge, Nigella Lawson, Madness frontman Suggs and other customers in helping it to raise the £100,000 it needed to buy the building. He says of the restaurant, the appeal of JoJo's is straightforward. Rustic Mediterranean cooking by chef Nikki Billington and relaxed, easygoing service led by her partner Paul Watson.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think we've probably reached the end of another show. What do you think?
Well, yes. I mean, I could go on forever.
We could
talk about crocheting more as well.
We could as well, but sadly, we've run out of time.
We have.
I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsor, the lovely folks at Potter's Home Digital, to our brilliant guest, 12-year-old entrepreneur Kimora Haynes of Kimmy Crochets. Keep on keeping on, Kimora, you're brilliant. To our equally fabulous guest, Gemma Fairclough-Haynes of Orchard Employment Law. To my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jules Serkin. And most of all, for all you listeners out there and everybody that tweeted, emailed and all the rest of it, if we didn't read your email out, and we didn't read many out, to be honest, no. We'll have to do it next week.
Busy, busy week.
Yeah. But thank you all for joining us. We'll be back with another show next week.
And don't forget to watch me on GB News tomorrow.
GB News, she's back on again. You're going to get your own gig on there soon, aren't you?
Three times. But this was the dresses. I'm running out of dresses, Gemma. Yeah, yeah. Oh, what to wear? If anybody wants to sponsor me on a little dress, you know, I'm 5'11", size 16, because I'm running out of dresses, because you can't have too much cleavage on telly. You've been on telly, you know. Yeah. You can't
I
have
like
too
it
much
GB News. It's quite a nice studio, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I'm at Westminster.
Have you been on?
I've been on there, yeah.
Who were you with?
I was with Dan Wilton. Patrick.
Christy.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Were you at Paddington or Westminster?
Paddington.
Yeah, I'm at Westminster. I haven't been there yet, but I have been to the Paddington one.
What time are you on?
8 p.m. Mark Stein. He's worth watching. He is a breath of fresh air.
Right, 8 p.m. tomorrow on GB News. You can catch up with Jules and
but I don't know what to
ramblings.
Wear.
But she might be naked, so wear dark glasses.
I might have to wear the same dress again.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll be back next week with another Business Bunker show. Have a safe week, everybody, and we'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.